Hey, let's go from there. I'm really? Trevante Jaramillo. Ah, what an asshole I am. Guest is John Wendell, stand-up comic, and I don't really know what else because we met on Facebook through a mutual friend, so that's what I know about the guy. Can you believe I was trying to explain to John a second ago how terrible I am at this, and that was the first time I messed up my own name, and there's no way I'm editing it out. What a fucking asshole.
That's great, man. You know, I mean, you really helped to put me at ease because at least I know my own name. So,
now, am I saying that right, John?
Yeah, that is. It's John. It's biblical. You should be able to get that down. And right. And you even said the last name right, so you're on a roll. You got my name right.
I didn't say
your own.
I didn't say Wendell. Or
no. You said Wendell. You pronounced it properly, and if you can just get your own name, we'll be on. We'll have a show.
Trevante's here for you, people. Like I said, we met through a mutual friend on Facebook, and you're pretty freaking funny, and I wanted to kind of ask you about that. Like, you're very funny. That sounded really condescending. You're very funny. I've actually seen a little bit of stand-up that you've done that you put on the inner tubes there. Writing-wise, you're really funny, which kind of makes me wonder about, you know, how Facebook affects your actual, like, act. But I'll swing back around to that. How old a guy are you, John?
I am an old guy. I'm 39 years old.
Jesus
so,
Christ. This thing better take off
pretty
soon.
I mean, but you know what? The good thing is I'm almost dead because I'm overweight, so there's no way I'm going to last, like, a normal long life.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you're past the point. You're on the downhill slope, shall we say.
It's about, doctors give me 50-50 to get through this podcast.
Oof.
Well,
that beginning couldn't have helped, so I apologize for that. okay, so I'm gonna venture a guess that you haven't been doing stand-up since you were, like, 19. Like, what did you do?
No.
Like, what? Like, you just had, like, day jobs? Like, till when did you start? Or what's that all about?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just started a couple of years ago, actually, about 2.5 years ago. I was just about to get married for the second time for some reason.
Jackass.
And I mean, I don't know what makes someone do that twice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and my wife just wanted probably to get me out of the house so she could fuck around on me and suggested that, you know, Sort of like, if you think you're so fucking funny, why don't you get up on stage and be a stand-up? And I was like, see you later, bitch. And I did. And, so I actually did which a lot of people, you know, like to kind of diss, but I did a stand-up class because I figured, you know, if I did, like, one of these little class workshop deals, like, maybe that would give me the balls to actually get up on stage if I was around other assholes who had never done it. And it sort of worked. So, yeah, so it's about 2.5 years ago.
Were you always that guy that people are like, oh, my God, you're funny. You should totally do stand-up. Like, are you like that guy? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. When I wasn't busy getting laid constantly because of my good looks, people were telling me I was funny and should try comedy. So, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was just a matter of, you know, stand-up comedy is definitely at least like 50% nerve to just get up there and start it and keep going. And you know, I didn't have that. I wasn't born with a pair of balls. So, just at some point I decided, you know what, it's now or never. Let me give it a shot. And, and that's it.
So
who's the
person that taught you this class?
The class was taught at Gotham Comedy Club by Jim Mendrinos, who wrote the book, A Complete Idiot's Guide to Comedy Writing. And, you know, Jim's a good guy. You know, definitely he's been doing comedy for like 25 years. And, you know, the thing about a comedy class or any of these kind of workshops for beginners, I think, is it's not even so much about the teacher or whatever. It's just about, you know, getting up there and trying and doing it and grabbing the mic and just sort of hearing yourself speak and that sort of thing. And that's it. You know, I just did a few classes and it kind of got me the nerve to keep trying it. And that was it.
So, like,
my beginning.
Do you remember, like, what was the first time you performed? I'm not do you remember it? I was going to ask a different question, but like the first time that you performed was like an open mic night or like an actual show or what?
Yeah, I mean, I did, you know, in addition to the class I did, I started doing some open mics, you know, in New York, in the city, and Times Square Arts Center Comedy Club. I did, you know, a few different clubs there. And yeah, I mean, I remember the first time I did an open mic, I went and signed up, and I was told to get 5 minutes. But I kind of signed up late, and they were running low on time. So I was throwing, I really had studied up and polished up this 5 minute act, and I went up there, and right before I went up, the host was like, listen, we're running low on time, we can only give you 1 minute. So I went up there, and I just talked about how fucked up it is that I drove into the city and had 1 minute to do comedy, and, you know, I was like, fuck you, and then that's it, and I left. So that was sort of
my
first time.
Like, did the crowd give you anything on that, or?
You know, a little bit of an awkward giggle, which, right. which is better than throwing shit at me. So I took it, and you know, I went home and like beat my wife or whatever, something appropriate. But, and that was it. And I just, you know, I went back and did it a few more times. You know, like a full whole 5 minutes, and just sort of you know, went from there. Really,
you finally got to that punchline on that story.
I remember whatever horrible jokes I was. It was right around the time that Gary Coleman died, you know, where his wife pushed him down the fucking stairs and shit. So
did you do any cooler jokes or anything like that?
No, I was just trying to do things about like what it would be like, in, you know, in heaven with Gary Coleman or hell or, you know, just stupid shit like that. Where he's like, you know, what are you talking about, Jesus? You know, that kind of stupid shit. But and then also I talked about how disappointed the earthworms that ate his dead carcass would be when they realized how small he was. You know, just you know, abnormally disturbing shit like that.
I'm with
you. I mean, nobody laughed, but I was kind of, I thought it was funny, so I kept going. But, you know, beginning, like I said, at the beginning, it's not as much about, you know, what you're saying, just kind of getting up there and hearing yourself talk, and I'm old enough that, you know, so when you're 19, 20 years old, I think the first time you get up there and someone looks at you funny, you probably run home to mommy scared and you never do it again. So I was kind of beyond that. I'm a divorced and a battle-hardened adult. So I was kind of
Back around to, like, what did you do, like, when you were just, like, a regular working dude? Like, was there anything that was, like, were you, like, a truck driver or, like, something where it kind of, like, gave you that?
No, nothing that advanced. I've worked my whole life in retail management because that's where people who have no direction in life end up. And so, you know, I mean, just, yeah, that's been my day job, like working retail management and working my way up through that and just sort of, you know, I deal with a lot of people.
Hey, man, that's a good battleground for it about because,
yeah,
when you're talking about people's money and their satisfaction, God damn it, you're going to listen to what I have to say.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I can actually see that being pretty helpful. Like, do you remember now? Like, do you remember the first time you really like nailed it? Like, maybe you've never really said that, but the first time that you were like, "Oh shit," you know, like that was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know what's interesting? You say, and I would venture to guess that a lot of comics would say the same thing. I know some have that. You know, you certainly sometimes you remember when you really nail it, but you definitely remember when you shit,
yeah,
you know,
when
you're up
shit
there and you bomb, man. When you're, yeah, you're just like, why the fuck did I think that hamburger joke was funny? And you're like crying on the ride home. Yeah. Like that. I'm never doing this again. You know, that's what you kind of go through when that's sort of the whole double-edged sword, you know, and you just want to get back up there and get it right. And then when you do, you know, when you nail it, it just feels like you're a god among men. And when you bomb, you just feel like you want to crawl into a corner and die. So that's the torture. That's why comics are tortured, man.
As a fan, and not only that, as a friend of a pretty goddamn funny stand-up comic, in my opinion, he's been on my show. He helped me start this show, so he's been on here like 10 or 15 times. His name is Rob O'Leary. I mean, I genuinely would love to say he sucks because, like, him and I just have that relationship where we just kind of shit on each other all the time anyway. And I remember one day, I don't remember what we were talking about, but I flat out said to him, like, dude, you should write jokes. Like, you're fucking hysterical. And he's like, that's so weird that you say that, because I've actually written some jokes. I have about a half an hour worth of stand-up. And he didn't, like, show it to me or nothing like that. But then we started, like, our community sucks. There's nothing to do except for karaoke and drink and, you know, bang whores and stuff. But some opportunities came out, and he, you know, it was like the kind of stuff where it's like a, I don't know, 6 or 7 person show, quote unquote established comics in the area, like nobody, you know, really famous or even halfway famous around here. And you know, he got 10 minutes, and the way the lineup came out, he had to close. So like part of me was like, God, I hope he just fucking eats shit face first. But then part of me is like, if he nails this, like he's going to be a king. Like he'll never not close for this group. And sure enough, like I watched him over a year, like 10 or 12 times, probably just absolutely murder with different shit every time. And I would just get sad. I'm like, I'm smart. Like I tried to fucking write jokes, and I can't do it. And I hate him for the ability to be able to do that. I just really,
yeah, I hate him, and I don't even know him just from your description. I'm gonna kick his ass if I ever meet him.
No, but, you guys definitely should fist fight and then maybe kiss afterward.
Yeah, or during. But yeah, I mean that's, you know. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Sometimes you just got it or you don't got it. But, you know, I mean, you could, there's also a difference between the writing a joke and the being able to do stand-up. I mean, there are people that have a stage presence, and there are people that kind of can't really pull that off but can write for other people. You know, there's a big, wide world of comedy out there, and you know, there's room for everybody. But and it just takes perseverance. You just got to keep at it. And, you know, sometimes some people are natural, and it sounds like this guy, you know, is just one of those that gets up there and has a good presence and you know, has some,
yeah, he
some
fucking
funny
makes
shit
me sick.
To relate well to the crowd. That's what it's all about. You know?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say he relates well to the crowd, but he definitely is a funny motherfucker. Now, you were probably like, was it kind of like a lone wolf thing, or was there like already this like built-in posse that came out of that class that you took, or like how did that stuff go?
Oh, no. I don't have or make friends, if that's what you're asking. But I'm on my second marriage. I've long since lost the ability to like meet and have a good time with other people that I am not having sex with.
Well, we're only 10 minutes in, and I'll offer the reach around. So
thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. It'll be the only time a hand other than mine is on there. Believe me. But I mean there was a couple of guys who. You know, we make little, like, open mic dates and that sort of thing, and you kind of go with a couple people and see them for the first few months, and then that sort of faded out for me, and then I, you know, met some other people, and then, you know, I live in the Hudson Valley of New York, just north of the city, and I've sort of melded from, I've gone from performing in the city to more performing just outside of the city and met some people in my area, and there's kind of a, you know, kind of a crew that sort of exists, kind of a, you know, kind of a comedy community of maybe, you know, 20 of us that we sort of see each other all the time and that sort of thing. So,
that's cool.
But you know, it's a tight knit community. I mean, there's, you know, you think there's a million, you know, comics. There's really not. And when you do it for long enough, you sort of end up meeting a lot of pretty much everybody at some point. And I've only been doing it 2.5-3 years. So, you know, I've got a lot more people to meet and many more asses to kiss, but we got a good little chunk of people.
What's the deepest you've made it into like the New York scene? Like, meaning
what's
like,
the what?
Like the deepest that you've made it into the New York scene, like the Manhattan scene. Like, have you played all those like the actual like, you know?
Yeah. I've done, you know, I've done most of the clubs. I mean, whether it's an open mic or a pro show, I've done, you know, rather, you know, Gotham, Eastville, Laugh Lounge, you know, Times Square. I've done a bunch of them. Stand Up New York, et cetera. But you know, I don't perform there regularly now. I did when I was starting out a little more, just to kind of get my feet wet. But it's tough when you're starting out. I mean, you need to spend a lot of you need to live in the city, and I live outside of the city.
Right.
You need to be single and live on your parents' couch and have nothing to do but sit around all day.
I was gonna say, like, you took a pretty late swing at this whole thing, and like,
yeah.
I mean, how hard is that? Because like, I mean, you must still have a day job, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a gay job. Is that what you said? Yes, I do.
You know, I don't know.
I have a gay
I don't know
job.
What you're talking about now. Well, like, awful is that? I mean, like, because I mean, okay, let me just say from my perspective, like, okay, I'm just some shithead with three microphones and a computer, and I would rather do my podcast than my actual job, like, all the time. Like, for you, it must be even worse because, like, I mean, even though there's numbers I can look at, you know, people that like my show, it's like a, basically like a theoretical number, like, it could be or couldn't be. Like, for you, you actually know, you know, you have that receipt of, you know, people laughing and coming to your, coming to see your shit. Like, how hard is that? Like, do you...
It's hard, but it's, I'm sort of, you know, as long as I'm progressing, as long as I'm able to keep my, you know, keep doing sort of both worlds, I'm happy, you know, well, not happy. I don't know what that's like, but, whatever, not suicidal. I'm currently not suicidal.
Not suicidal. But I think that's probably the best you can hope for.
Yeah, but really, you know, to answer your question, yeah, no, it's tough because when you have, you know, I've already got, like, I've got a teenage daughter, I pay child support, and I, you know, I can't just say, you know, fuck you, boss, I'm going to be a comedian, man, and then just, like, eat the shit that comics have to eat those first few years in order to really get stage time. Like, you know, I'll wax the fucking stage and I'll clean the bathroom so you can give me a 5-minute spot if someone calls out sick on a weekend. You know, that's...
Right.
There's a lot of that when you're starting out, and I can't really do that. So after the first few months of sort of forcing the time to sort of get my feet wet, so I've kind of retreated back out of the city, and I'm just doing more like, you know, local bar shows and that sort of thing, where there's some promoters around who have been kind enough to give me some gigs with the littlest bit of pay and that sort of thing. So it's sort of gone from there where I perform at real shows, you know, maybe anywhere from 2 to 5 times a month. And,
now, okay. Now, not being, know, just some 19-year-old shithead, does that give you any more like respect from any of these guys, or is it all the same shit?
No, I have no respect for them. Fuck them. No, I, yeah, no, I mean, you know what? I don't respect or envy, you know, like I sort of envy the young, you know, the shitty 21-year-old comic or 19-year-old comic who's up there and who I know is going to be a regular professional comic in a few years because they can and will do what's necessary to get there, you know, put in the time, eat the shit they have to eat, where I can't do that just because of, you know, my late, you know, foray into this. But you know, but I'm kind of at peace with that. And like I said, not quite suicidal about it. And I just, you know, I deal with being sort of more of a part-time comic. And, you know, we always sit there and then kind of hope one day someone's going to come in and go, I'm from NBC. I'd like to sign you to a $1 million contract. You know, so you sort of hold out hope for that and just sort of see where
God
it takes.
God damn it. Hey, I hate to derail this, but hang on 1 second. I got to pause this and I'll be right back, okay?
Sure.
Hang on 1 sec, bro.
All right, take two.
Jesus Christ. All right, we're recording already, so sorry, man. I've wasted so much of this man's time. I feel like I should take a handful of Vicodin, parachute it up my asshole, and then shoot myself with a 12-gauge. Back to it.
It would be original.
I don't know. I think I've heard that one before. I'm pretty... I'm a bigger hack as anybody ever met. So.
I don't know who you hang out with, but okay.
Speaking of hack, here's a hack question for you. Like, who are your guys? Like, do you watch any stand-up? Or are you one of those kind of guys that, like, you don't want to, like, watch else? Or...
Yeah, no. I love to watch other stand-ups, man. And it's just, you know, and I watch a lot of them, and it's, you know, it's become something where, you know, I'm watching it through their eyes. I'm not even watching it as a person in the crowd. I'm just thinking, like, oh, look what he did there. You know, it's so, once you've done it, you can admire these guys even more, I think. And, you know, my guys who are doing it now that I really, you know, I really like and admire that, you know, are going to, most of them are going to hit on anybody's top 10 list or whatever. I love, you know, Louie and Bill Burr and Patton Oswalt, I think is brilliant. You know, I love Dave Chappelle. A lot of people like to hate on him, and I think Dave Chappelle's brilliant. I think Chris Rock is still, you know, brilliant. You know, Zach Galifianakis, I think, is hilarious. I think, you know, I mean, I can just go on and on. I mean, there's so many.
That's a pretty stock list, I think. I mean.
Yeah, that's a pretty good starting point. You know, I wouldn't, I'd probably trade comedy careers with any of those people at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. and I'd even take, like, probably Chappelle's penis is more impressive than mine, so I'll take that, too. Most of them have more hair than me, so I'd trade just about anything with any of them.
Okay, let me ask you something man-to-man here. I've noticed that, and you know, I probably noticed this because I do it, but I also noticed in your, you did put one video on Facebook, and I don't remember where it was from or whatever. It was like a 5 or 6 minute set. You seem to really attack yourself a lot in your act. Like, where's the hurt come from? What, you know, did you
well, doctor, would you watch some fucking Dr. Phil today and thought you'd give it a shot?
I just want to know where the real pain is lying. Is that a good Dr. Phil? I don't know.
I mean, self-deprecating humor is, you know, is a big thing, and it's, you know, it's a big thing for me. And you know, sometimes I sort of embellish it. You know, I make my relationship with my wife sound like it's this horrible thing, but really, I just sort of
hey,
play
don't break
on
down
that.
The doors, man. I mean, I want to think that she's this evil. I was going to say the C word, but she's your wife, so I'll leave it out. But
yeah.
No, so you do pump it up a little bit. It's not really like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to a point, but I think also there's a lot in the saying that, you know, the funniest things come from the deepest, like, truth, you know, so
yeah.
I think it kind of starts there with a feeling, and then you just try to, you know, just something funny about it kind of comes out, usually in some angry rant, and then it sort of gets molded into, you know, part of a comedy routine, but yeah, I mean, you know, look, I'm a bald, fat, 39-year-old guy who just started comedy a few years ago. I'm on my second marriage. I pay child support. I'm like, there's an imminent cardiac arrest waiting for me. There's plenty. I have a teenage daughter and a 1-year-old daughter. I mean, I am fucked for a living. So it's like, yeah, I have plenty to draw on.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but I can take the teenager off your hands.
No, that's okay. You know, I feel awkward about it, actually. I now feel. That is my current feeling. she's at college and probably already busy with some, so I don't want to take her away from that. That wouldn't be right.
All right, Dad.
I pick on myself. You know, your feelings and your thoughts and your, you know, the deepest shit, you know, when you're a fat guy, you feel shitty about being fat, so you make jokes about being fat, and you try to hope that, you know, that kind of comes through in a way that's humorous and not just too degrading without being funny, you know, and that's sort of...
Or just sad. You're like, oh.
Right, or just sad. Yeah, you don't want to make, you know, you don't want to just make the audience feel, you know, feel sad for you. You don't want to get up there and be like, I'm really fat and I'm probably going to die soon and everything, so, you know... I'm going to go on a diet. You know, now that's just like, ooh, okay, we feel weird now. You know?
Right, yeah, they're like,
I'd rather, you know, I'll talk about shit how when I come home, and the only thing I've been looking forward to all day is that little bit of leftover chocolate cake in the fridge, and I open the door and discover that my wife has decided that we are on a diet, and it's gone. And it's like, that's my life. So
this would be funny if he wasn't pricking his finger right now, but I don't know. It's a little weird. What do you want out of doing this, man?
What do I want to do in this?
What do you want out of doing?
For now, what I want is to be able to get the fuck out of the house for a couple hours a week, which so far, you know, is happening. And, you know, I keep promising my wife it's a big break's right around the corner, so she lets me keep going out of the house. So, I just get a rush out of it, man. You know, once you're on stage and you kind of get hooked, it's like any other drug or anything, you know, once you sort of, it doesn't take but a couple of times and those first real big laughs and, you know, before you're just hooked, you know, and that's what it is. I'm addicted to it. I don't, you know, I want to do it, but I, even more importantly, I have to do it because, right. You know, I'm hooked. And when I go a week or week and a half without, you know, getting on stage, I become irritable like somebody who hasn't had a cigarette or heroin or whatever. And I just, you know, I start raping and that's, I want to get away from that.
Well, let's loop back around to your heroin addiction and rape. Well, so is she's supportive for the most part, like, or does she like?
Yeah, no, my wife's very supportive. She is.
And why is that? Is she independently wealthy and doesn't give a shit, or she has?
No. She just probably wants me to get the fuck out of the house for a couple hours a week, I think. And
so Brian can come over.
She doesn't know quite what I talk about. about her. So, you know, it's...
Has she ever seen
you? No, she's supportive and believes in me. So, yeah, she's seen me, you know, a few times, and especially earlier on. I got a show coming up on, you know, March 1st. She's coming, too. So, you know, I mean, she definitely, she sees me, and she's really pretty much one of my best kind of judges when, you know, when I come up with a routine or a joke or just a thought and I bounce it off her. She's got a pretty good ear for what other people would find funny or what's just sort of stupid, and she's not afraid to tell me.
Yeah.
Tell me either way, so I really use her as kind
of... She's like, look, if this is going to be our big break, I got to be honest with you. That shit about whatever it is, that's terrible. Get rid of it.
She's like, don't talk about raping a 9-year-old. That's terrible. Make him 10.
Yeah.
Make him 10.
And make it, make sure it's a boy. We have girls, you asshole.
Right, so she's really good with that, and but she's super supportive in that sense. And I'm still trying to make it. You know, I think any comic, I think it's easy to say, no, I'm exactly where I want to be. I want to be, you know, I made almost $1,000 last year at this game, and I want to continue on. No, I mean, of course you want to make it. It's just, it's kind of difficult because you really do have to pound the pavement and spend the time, and which I don't have, so I'm just sort of... You know, I'm doing it on a part-time basis and just trying to hone my skills and get better and hope that as things go on, you know, it'll sort of break through for me.
Have you ever spoken to Tarasa on the phone?
Have I ever what?
You know Tarasa Harlow?
Yeah.
Have you ever spoken to her, like, in actual life?
No, I haven't.
I would do yourself probably, a favor.
I have a restraining order against her.
I've been thinking about the same thing, but...
I have bodyguards to keep her from me, so...
All right.
Not even allowed to put her name. No, she just,
she's
one of those people on Facebook who sort of, you know, started following me, but she leaves a lot of good, comments. And
I actually spoke to her on the phone. She's super funny. I'm gonna go ahead and pitch. Like, I'm gonna act like I have something to do with either one of you guys, and I'm gonna write a little script that stars the two of you, and I think it's gonna be giant. But we'll get back to that.
Well, I'm ready. I'm ready for that.
Another thing about the Facebook thing, and we've already been fucking around with this for 50 minutes between my horseshit computer and terrible interview skills. So I think we could probably kill pretty strong. I want to ask you this. My buddy Rob, they had left for a little while. They were trying to do, like, he's got a band on top of being stand-up, and they went to Seattle to check it out, and something got fucked up, and so they're coming back. So, like, would you consider doing this again with me and him when he gets back? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Right on. Because then maybe you guys can actually start a feud and hate each other over who's funnier and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or start, you know, maybe start one of those catfish relationships over the computer and phone. That would be great too.
You know, the best thing about that is if it was real, like, you know how the show, it's usually not the guy they think or whatever. But if it was real, it couldn't be a worse letdown if it was just real. So,
right. Yeah, if nothing was staged and if they didn't say, okay, now we're going to do that again.
We're like, well, wait a minute, this is all terribleness anyway. I think we should just go home.
Yeah.
The one thing that
I think it's all real. What are you talking about? Everything's real.
No, yeah, I agree. It's all real.
They couldn't call it reality TV if it wasn't real, now could they?
Right. Right, Dr. Drew? Yeah. Sorry.
he's doing well. How about that guy? How about Dr. Drew? Everybody he helps.
You know,
he's like 1 for 3 of keeping people alive 2 months past his show.
I didn't want to get into this, but since you said it, not only did I see him defending himself to Wolf Blitzer on CNN today, but also I heard the Stanhope bit that you were talking about. That shit is really the punchline is the best. They're like, oh, you better pray, motherfucker. This is getting awful. And he's like, wait a minute, you're an actual doctor? He's like, yeah, I'm on TV too.
Yeah, awesome. No, I mean it's true. I mean, it's, you know, well, what are you going to do? It's tough to fix people, and then you can, then they die.
So well, I think the big thing is you probably shouldn't, A, have cameras around these attention whore addicts. B,
you would think.
Right. B, maybe make it a little bit longer than 6 weeks. And then C, maybe leave the graduation where, like, you're fixed out, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, it's certainly... You know, I don't know. I don't know how how he, you know, his success rate compares to like non-television train wrecks, but it can't be that much worse. I mean, or well, better. I don't know.
So, far as I can tell, Intervention's 100%. They're batting 1,000. I mean,
right, because you never show them again, so you just assume they might work out. I guess. I assume.
Christina has been sober since April 3rd.
They just put it up on the screen, like, you know, she's all right. It's going to be fine. You know, right. Like, this guy's awesome.
I have nothing against Dr. Drew.
Should watch that show.
Well, what do you actually do you have a feeling about Dr. Drew? Because I personally, I kind of like him. I don't agree. I think he should stay off TV for a minute.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a real strong opinion about it because I'm not a doctor or a Drew. So,
or an alcoholic.
I'm addicted to comedy. That's about it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there's been studies to show what the heck cameras do to you and shit. But, you know, I got to think like anything else. It's, you know, there's people that are sick out there, and unless they're getting like constant help all the time, they're going to be a lot of recidivism in that alcoholism shit. And, you know.
Nice pull. Very good. Kind of like a big word on a comic. That's nice.
Yeah, I looked that up on my thesaurus here.
what I was wanting to get to with you is I was going through my, you know, fine friends list, and I was looking through a stand-up friend of mine's list and saw that she was friends with Kurt Metzger, right?
Correct.
And so I was like, yeah, what the hell? Send a request. And he accepts me. So I'm actually friends on Facebook with Kurt Metzger. I think that's amazing shit. You are also friends on Facebook with Kurt Metzger, but apparently that came with a different set of circumstances. What happened there?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I when I was first starting out comedy a couple years ago, I was watching some comedians, and I saw Kurt Metzger's stand-up special on Comedy Central, which I thought was not great. Because he's, you know, he works blue, he works rough, and when you try to polish some comics up, it's tough, and it was rough. But, you know, so then I friend requested him just to sort of get some more comics, you know, whatever. And then, anyway, he ended up making some kind of comment about Aziz Ansari, you know, if you know him from 40-Year-Old Virgin, the Indian guy, he's real funny, but... some magazine said he was real funny, and I do. But Kurt came out and blasted him, and said he was. You know, how can you say he's the, you know, funniest guy? So I just kind of, because I love to poke at people and fuck with people, and, you know, get attention that way, because I was not held enough as a kid. So I just sort of started, you know, playfully laying in on Kurt and being like, dude, he's funnier than you, even though I don't believe that. But, you know, just like, you suck, and all this kind of thing.
Jesus.
And then he started attacking me, and he's like, "What do you know? You've been doing comedy for 2 weeks, and all this shit." And it kind of went back and forth. And,
like 3 weeks, you know, and 2 days, you asshole.
Yeah. So now every now and then, you know, I'll comment on some of his, or he'll comment some of me, and, you know, try to just, you know, insult the person almost enough to make them cry, and kind of back and forth on that a little bit. So, but it's been fun, and we love hate each other probably, and yeah. So that's.
Can you talk about what it's gotten for you, or what it's supposed to get for you?
Not really. It's, you know, I would probably say it's gotten me, you know, roughly nothing at all. No, it's nothing. It's just, you know, it's been fun to comment back and forth and just sort of, you know, just get his goat. It's just fun to see, you know, because comics are all sort of the double sided coin of, you know, half super ego because I think I'm awesome and funny and I'm on stage and look at me and you suck and I'm awesome. And then the other side of that, which is, you know, I suck, I'm horrible, I'll never be good enough, I'm a fraud, and I hope nobody finds out. So
No. I didn't mean the feelings you get, asshole. I meant what did you actually what are you actually gonna get out of it? Like,
and I said nothing, so that's why I was just explaining.
No. Can you not talk about the
The podcast? Kurt's got a pod. You know, I'm under no contractual obligations here. But no, Kurt's got Kurt Metzger's got and for people who don't know him, he's, you know, he was big in this recent thing with the UCB, and they don't pay their comics, and he was kind of in the middle of that. And That's another whole thing. But Kurt asked me to be on this podcast that he's got coming up soon. And, you know, he hasn't started that yet. But, you know, as soon as it comes up, I will certainly let everybody know. And I think the idea of that is supposed to be to insult me on the podcast and for me to take it up the ass, figuratively speaking. But,
right.
We'll see. We'll see if that works out for him.
You want to hear something really douchey?
You lost all of that, right?
No. That would be funny, though. I lost it again. Let me call you.
We've not been recording, sir. This is just a phone conversation. I'm a fan and a stalker, and I'm outside your window.
You son of a bitch. When he, it was shortly after he accepted my friend request or whatever, and then he started going off like him and I share growing up Jehovah's Witness in common, and this is a giant long shot, and I know I look like a dick for it, but I don't care. I actually did message him because me and Rob, the other guy I was talking about, we did about 2.5 hours, not intentionally, but. That's just kind of how it went. Like Rob is a Asatru, like a Viking religion dude. And So me and him were talking, like, we were kind of just paralleling stuff, and it went for like 2 hours. And I was like, I want really badly to to talk to Kurt Metzger at all, you know, in person. That would be amazing. But then I just wondered, because he's such a psycho about how, you know, anti-religion maybe. Like, yeah, he's not anti-God. He's definitely anti, you know, secular religion, but needless to say, he never answered back. And maybe don't mention me by name, but be like, hey, I got this guy.
I'll definitely tell him. Hey, you know what? It's been a week or two since I've told him he was a dick for some reason, so this will be good. This will
awesome.
It'll be fine. I'll let him know. Yeah, and Jehovah's with it. So is that what this is? Is this all to get me to convert to Jehovah and give you money? Are you going to come knocking at my door now?
Speaking of being right outside your window, I have a few watchtowers to like drop off with you. And if I could read you Ezekiel 17:34, which I don't know what that says, that'd be great if I did. What a pull that would be.
Are you the guy that leaves those little pamphlets in the mall, like on the garbage can that you find that tell you about Jesus so you can read it?
I don't think I'm the one that leaves them there, no. No, but yeah.
Because I read them. I just want you to know I read them.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Well, you know, God be with you and baby Jesus.
You're welcome.
I'm not going to take up any more of your time. It's already been an hour. I imagine we can do this again as long as you stay mediocre.
Yeah, man.
Level.
Yeah, it's fun.
So.
Sure. As soon as I start to get a little bit big, I'm going to change my number.
Well,
so,
and vice versa. I mean, you won't find me anywhere. I'd be like, John Wendell. I don't. It doesn't ring a bell. He talks about being fat and dying here in a minute. Oh, that guy. Yeah.
It's a very rare, very rare trait.
Well, John, hey, man, I appreciate you plowing through the technical difficulties. I'm going to do my last little plugs here. GoFromThere.podbean.com. Go from there on iTunes. Do you have anything people can go look at, or you want people to look at and not steal? Or
no, I mean, I just got a few, few local shows coming up. I got a competition. I'm a 2-time champion at a local comedy club, looking to three-peat on that. That's coming up this Friday. It's February 22nd. Got some other shows coming up. But, other than that, hopefully people keep their ears and eyes open and hear a little bit more John Wendell in the future.
Right on, man. Well, good luck to you. Appreciate you being on. And I will holler at you as soon as the next available fat guy comic in studio, can get on with the two of us and we'll jam a little bit. So,
cool, brother. All right, thanks, man.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.